Yes. Actually, before working about it, governing the rural employment rights and hegemony in India, I have worked on rural politics, basically how caste is related with the grassroots politics, how panchayat is working, and how patronage politics has been developed since long. After that, actually, I thought that what about these new issues? This is a very big and much talked issue, Employment Generation Act. I'm not sure that in African country, maybe this kind of policies are being introduced now. All over the world, actually, this kind of policies are now going to be introduced, this employment generation program. So how it works in India, and what is the intention and aim of the government, civil society organization? Because in India, civil society organizations are very strong, mediate between the governed people and the government. So how actually they are intending to do? What is their argument, and how it works, and what is the difference between this kind of policies and the earlier ones? Is there any difference between these two kinds of policies? So this is actually main thrust of my work. So in 2005, actually in 2005, this act means and this is called Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Guarantee Act. Mahatma Gandhi, actually, maybe who are concerned about India may know this great freedom fighter during the British colonialism. Maybe you know. So actually, after his name, this act has been called Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Generation Act. So it is like an act, right to work. Everybody could claim, if anybody is unemployed, he or she could claim that.
Excuse me, sorry to interrupt. Can you start the slideshow? So
full screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
I think you just, here, click here.
So then everybody was very, basically from the academicians, they thought that what this kind of policies are being introduced in this time, right to work in the neoliberal regime. Then one professor actually working in CSTS, Rajiv Bhargava, I'm not sure, maybe Sirpa and Jyoti can know. So my point is that third point. Yes. So before 2005, there were lots of confrontation and struggle, protests has been emerged in India, in particularly in West Bengal. Since 2004, 2005, 2006, lot of anti-land acquisition movement, and in 2006, there is a big anti-land acquisition movement. This is called Shingul Land Movement, and then Lal Gaur Movement. And all over India, there are so many protest movement. And everybody was concerned about the poverty line, poverty counts, that poverty is increasing. So civil society actually tried to mediate between this government policies and this governments and this this rural people, basically. And they actually formed one committee, NAC. This is called NAC, National Advisory Committee, which was actually then advising the UPA government. UPA government meant actually Congress-led government. Congress means, you know very well, I do not know, this is a very National Congress Party, which was actually, which is led by now Sonia Gandhi, one Italian who is a daughter-in-law of Indira Gandhi. So she is now leading. Then actually in 2005, after this mediation, after this lots of discussion that how to actually pacify this kind of movements or this kind of protests, then in 2005 an act has been enacted. That means that if people can claim 100 days work, or only 100 days work in a year, government should give them this work, 100 days work. What is 100 days work actually? This means basically the government will create some kind of work which is manually actually people can do. That means that people have to dig the soil and that make the bridges like this. So first point is that government is trying to create that kind of job which only the laborer class can do. Laborer class and the land poor class can do. Because in rural area too, there is a big class differences. Actually, some people don't do actually this manual work. So I think that the government first tried to restrict or limit the sphere who can do the work, only the laboring class. So it is not the right to work for everybody, only for the some persons who can, who are willing to do this kind of manual works. So the point is that in that enactment of the act, government has written that while market-oriented reforms are necessary to generate growth and larger public resources, they do not on their own guarantee participatory and equitable growth. So government actually confesses it, that this kind of growth generation, economic growth cannot actually provide the sustainable development. So some active social policies is needed. The question arises that in the neoliberal conditions, when the scholar argues that institutional reforms are pro-market, pro-privatization, why the governments intervene into poverty alleviation programs? Is the extent of state interventions into welfare of the people declining in the contemporary period? Or are there indications of a new form of state-centered welfare policy interventions operating at the grassroots, seeking to govern the people in a different fashion? My question. And I will just again quote Rajiv Bhargava, just after the enactment of MGNREGA Act. He had raised similar kind of questions, and he states the real puzzle is now something like NOREGA, NREGA, was even passed in the current climate of hyper anti statism. Do you not know that in this new world order, the public provision of public goods is meant to become scarce? How could a new regime of social policy be installed in conditions where state intervention in the economy is routinely scoffed at? Where the welfare state is widely subjected to moral and economic critique and the market reigns supreme, expected to address even the basic subsistence needs of the people. In this connection, I will draw upon three representative views, including Bhargava, on why the governments intervene into poverty alleviation programs in the current climate of hyper-anti-statism. The essence of three representative views seems to be somewhat similar when all of them emphasize on electoral compulsion of different political parties or the question of democracy. Bhargava opines that the NREGA would never have seen the light of the day without pressure from the below. And this pressure could not be forthcoming without political freedoms if people didn't possess the right to vote. So this is electoral compulsion actually when government enacted these policies. No form of accountability is more direct from election, he said, Bhargava said. And the similar argument, somewhat a little bit different, Jenkins and Jadrej actually, who is the main architect of this project, Jothrich. And he said, subscribes to the widely held view that had the Congress thought it possessed even a remote chance of winning in 2004 general election, it never would have committed in this election manifesto, no less, to passing employment guarantee legislation of such far-reaching political significance. But Jenkins also believes that leadership variables played a role as well to ensure the NRAGS enactment. People associated with National Campaign for People's Rights, what I have said, that civil society organizations are actually organized in the committee. And this is National Campaign for People's Rights. Some activists are there, Aruna Irani, Aruna Rai from Rajasthan, and some people are there. And they always campaign for this right to food campaign, right to work campaign in the National Advisory Committee. The formation of NAC was a key factor in NRAGS enactment. And Parthacharya has actually told the same thing. The state, with its mechanism of electoral democracy, becomes a field for the political negotiation of demands for the transport of resources through fiscal and other means, from the accumulation economy to programs aimed at providing the livelihood needs of the poor. Actually, he has mainly quoted from Foucault. My argument is that MGNA's enactment is the main, in the main, originated as part of neoliberal reforms and transnational governmentality, which introduced new practices of government and also embodied very different kind of ideologies and goals from the earlier ones. Though the Electoral Democracy acts as an important factor to push forward this enactment. While the earlier policy intervention were welfare programs that provided tangible services and assets, as Gupta and Sharma envisaged recently, the contemporary policy regime began empowerment program aimed at helping the rural to become autonomous rather than dependent clients of the state waiting for the redistribution of the resources. My research reveals, by examining the Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Guarantee Act in the rural hinterland of West Bengal, that both in its conceptualization and everyday practices, the employment guarantee programs, being far from right to work and also far from concerned with empowerment and self-help characteristics of the neoliberal governmentality, it is still rendering the individuals dependent clients of the state, and hence it is not the end of welfare and its replacement with workfare, but the simultaneous expansion of both kinds of programs, which we have talked very recently, that at the same time patronage politics is also being active with this empowerment programs or entrepreneurship programs. This is also reveals that though the government tries to negotiate the issues of poverty by framing and implementing some poverty alleviation program like NREGA, it could impact very little on the jobs and livelihoods, particularly of the rural people. And the issues of inequity take new shape and recreate new issues of contestation as a result of the socio-political processes emerged at the grassroots due to implementation of difficult, different welfare policies of the governments. Two important features of political rationalities of neoliberal government. I actually mainly consulted with Foucault's some works and neo-Foucauldian theories. One is Foucault's discussion of neoliberal governmentality shows, as Lemke argues, that the so-called retreat of the state is in fact prolongation of government. Neoliberalism is not but the transformation of politics that restructures the power relations of the society. What we observe today is not a diminishment of or a reduction of state sovereignty and planning capacities, but a displacement from formal to informal techniques of governments and the appearance of new actors on the scene of government that indicate fundamental transformation in statehood and a new relation between the state and civil society actors. Because in recent period, what we have seen in the empirical ground of India, that NGOs and some other informal kind of organizations are very active to deliver the governance issues, to deliver the benefit distribution like this. And number two, neoliberal forms of government also feature not only direct intervention by means of empowered and specialized state apparatuses, but also characteristically develop indirect techniques for leading and enrolling, controlling individuals. The strategy of rendering individual subjects responsible entails shifting the responsibility for social risks such as illness, unemployment, poverty, etc., and for life in society into the domain of in the domain for which the individual is responsible, and transforming it into a problem of self-care. In India, it is now becoming popular. Everybody is concerned about their actually individual self-help care. You should actually ensure your health, your crop, even your home like this. So this kind of change actually has been done in this process. One key feature of neoliberal rationality is the congruence it endeavored to achieve between a responsible and moral individual and an economically rational individual, economically rational. In the mandate and objective sections of MGNREG, it has been written that MGNREG marks a paradigm shift, they claimed it, from the previous one because its design is bottom-up. People-centered, demand-driven, In the first, actually, in India, this kind of word is written in the government acts, demand-driven, where provision of work triggered by the demand for work by wage seekers, self-selecting and right-based. And also, it has an integrated natural resource management. Mind it. Then another kind of thing, actually, is included here that through their work, the unexplored nature, natural resources will be linked with the market through the work of these poor people. So this is another thing. These words clearly reveal that this act as a governmental technology encourages entrepreneurship, which means in normative sense, and any adult individual in rural India make their decisions, pursue their preferences, and seek to maximize the quality of their lives by demanding employment. But while on the other hand, the MGNREG encourages entrepreneurship, on the other, it limits the sphere of entrepreneurship. The contradiction, in fact, lies in the conceptualization of the act. Firstly, on the one hand, while it provides the legal guarantee of wage employment on demand and recognizes it to some extent as a right to work, on the other, it restricts the employment guarantee to only a limited time, 100 days. The people of Lalgarh, actually, where there was a very big movement during 2008, this is organized and led by Maoists. So then, actually, I interviewed some of the people and I just got some leaflets and I just have seen that what they have written. The people of Lalgarh responded interestingly in 2008 to the act which guarantees 100 days employment per year for every rural household. I quote a portion from it. Why it is only 100 days per us? While you, the government elites, are leading your luxurious lives throughout the year, would we have our meal only for 100 days? If you are really concerned about us, please think about how we, our families, can live throughout the year with self-dignity. So, secondly, in the neoliberal regime, when the language of the entrepreneurial individual endowed with freedom and autonomy has come to predominate over almost any other in evaluation of the ethical claims of programs of government, the Act provides 100 days of guaranteed wage employment in the financial year not to every individual, but only to every rural household. But always, actually, the people who do not read the entire acts, they seem that it is for every individual, but it is not for the every individual, it is for every family. This provision bars not only an individual to make efforts in the energetic pursuit of personal fulfillment, but also bars the very act to turn into a right to work. One respondent from the district of Purulia, actually, which is very drought prone, the irrigation facility is not there, water scarcity is there. And he said the government is propagating that this is a huge project providing 100 days work for everyone, But one job card has been issued for my family having 5-7 members. Hence, a few days work for each member of the family is fulfilling the 100 days quota. When we are approaching the panchayat president, panchayat means the local administration, local self-government, we are told not to work in the project. We will not be paid anymore. Thirdly, and most importantly, the Act provides 100 days of guaranteed wage employment in a financial year to every rural household whose adult members volunteer to do unskilled manual work. Manual work means the digging the earth, such as renovating or digging a pond or canal, constructing the village muddy road, which requires very hard labor. So the rural households or the individuals find it very limited choice to make their decisions, pursue their performance and seek to maximize their quality of life. One woman in Purulia, it said, due to the hard soil, Purulia very hard soil is actually, women can dig it. So she said that due to the hard soil, women folk are failing to fulfill the job so as to earn 100 a day. They would require what, two, three days to earn only rupees 100, you know. Actually, they will measure the space that how much they are digging, and that women need some 3 days to earn only 100 days because of their weak health. Hence, the MGNREG is in actual sense not to be recognized as citizens' right to work, as very often the government functionaries, the activist intellectuals and NGO personalities do propagate. Instead, MGNREG is clearly a household or familial right to unskilled manual work for 100 days. But the question is whether the state government could provide 100 days employment for the job seeker family in West Bengal. Even 100 days, actually, they are not giving. The Joint Secretary in the Department of Panchayat and Rural Development stated in 2010, the government could generate so far only less than 50% on an average, 42% percent days in West Bengal. There are a number of hindrances operational before the implementation process of the Act. We have a very limited amount of land to work on in West Bengal because you have to have some land to create the work. So very, actually in West Bengal, very the density of population is very high. You can find some spare land what we can dig something. So he said that we have actually lack of land, so we have a very limited amount of land to work on in West Bengal. Besides this, it seems to be the most important factor that the rural poor people are not enough aware about the Act. They are not straightforward to demand for work. What is the problem in creating demand? Because everything is written in English, and we can expect from them that they will demand the work, because we have to just claim like what I have filled up here after coming here on one form that I need some money. So they have to do it, and they are actually mostly, you can say, illiterate, and it is written in English, so they have to take help from the party's people. So again, some patronage politics. Party people will fill up their forms. The team leader of Pradhan is a very big NGO actually, in working in India, a national level NGO, and who said that we could not generate options for the landless poor, who are the most vulnerable section in the state. They are working for the rural people and for the landless since 30 years. But they said that we could not generate options for the landless poor, who are the most vulnerable section in the state. We have been working since 2006 in Purulia, but achieved a little in terms of poverty alleviation. The marginal or small peasants who own some amount of land are getting benefited by means of our work. Problem is that, again, in this type of work, at the end of the day, the rural gentry are going to be benefited because the roads will be constructed, and they will just renovate the ponds. From them, actually, irrigation will be facilitated. So again, for their work, for their manual labor, the rich gentry who have land, they are going to be benefited due to this act. Because they could utilize the effects of the durable assets produced in course of implementation of the act. After the land was acquired in Singhud, which I have told that there is a big movement, and this is a national news, not national, international news actually. After land was acquired in Singhud, the dispossessed peasants of the affected villages have got employment in 100 days, probably only 7 to 5, 15 days. They all become dispossessed, but they got only 7 to 15 days on an average in a year from 2007-2008. Interestingly, why they will create the war? Because land was acquired. So, no scope to actually create war. And the explanation of both the CPIM, actually, CPIM means Communist Party of India, who claimed to be the father of the poor and the guardian of the poor in India, and TMC-led Panchayat, is that no infrastructural opening available for employment generation. So, you know, the farce of this act, and one lady actually, the day laborer in Singhud, he stated, the sowing season has passed since long, and we remained unemployed for the last 2-3 months. How can we arrange food during this period? Now we can get just 10 days work in agriculture. All our work that we used to get in this field has vanished since it was acquired for the Tata Motor Companies actually. Hence, we have no more work. After acquisition of the land and fencing it off, even if we enter the field for grazing our cows and goats, we are accused of pilferage. When we cannot arrange food, how would we be able to continue our children's study? Actually, there are many people in the in this side, in rural areas, that they live on with livestock, actually. Now, actually, this kind of facilities has also been actually eliminated because of this land acquisition. So he said that our animals are not now getting food. So how could we survive? What is the impact of implementation of Narega on the economy of the village? In the Purulia, actually, I have done my fieldwork in 18 villages in 18 districts. And I have concentrated a little bit more on the Singhud area where land was acquired. Initially, the villagers were very enthusiastic about the project because it is a very well-trumpeted act. But they are no more interested about the project due to the delay of wage payment. Like everywhere, bureaucratic functioning, the day laborer who actually live on with daily wages. So, if they work today, they will get the money after 3 months. 3 months, actually, not, you are just surprised. Then it takes 25 days at least to pay the wages in some area. The villagers cannot wait such a long period as they all are day laborers. So, at this moment, there is no demand of jobs and also no impact of the economy on the village. So this is the paradox. On the one hand, in West Bengal, there is a big talk all over India that the state witnessed a better representation of marginal people, that is the participation of the landless and sharecropper peasants who mainly belong to the SC and ST communities in the local self-governments. On the other, the worst performance of MG Energy in terms of employment generation in comparison with the other states. Other states are doing something better, maybe. In fact, the scholarly researches amply show that in rural West Bengal, the political parties are in real powers. Here, this is another actually specific speeches regarding West Bengal, because here political parties are in the real power, and which control the panchayats and everyday politics at the grassroots. And these political parties are actually led and dominated by the landed upper caste gentries. They are really be interested to implement the MG Energy in their respective regions as it can increase the wage rate of laborers. This is another issue now coming. So who are actually from Iran and Ethiopia? I'm not sure about that. You know about the caste system of India. Maybe you know. So in this Communist Party actually in West Bengal is entirely dominated by the upper castes and the landholding class. So they are not willing to implement this act. This might one of the main reasons why the left party is including the CPIM, who had been very active to raise the demand of the act like MGN and AG at the parliament, was not much concerned to implement the act in West Bengal, where they were in power. Since the very inception, as told by Talwar, Anuradha Talwar was an activist who was very active to frame this act. And so we found that state government was quite reluctant to implement the act in the first year. The government wanted to suspend this implementation on the excuse of impending election. Despite the constraints like non-availability of land to create employment and bureaucratic hurdles in every step, the implementation of NAREGA yields some positive results in the places where party in power or the existing NGOs do collaborate with the government to implement this program, where some NGOs are very strong and where opposition are strong, so then there is election compulsion, then some work has been done. In fact, the operational guidelines and the rules of the act are devised in such a fashion that rural households whose adult members are volunteered to do manual work are unable to demand employment. And in many cases, the village Gram Sangshad being incapable to make planning to create work. And there is a rule actually in this act that village Sangshad, where everybody will participate and they will plan that what to do in the village, what work we have to plan. So many of them actually could not read the rules. So they could not actually create the work. In the regions where MGN energy is being implemented considerably, we would witness its impact on the labor market. It has led to an increase of agricultural wage rates. And in some cases, the wage effect is equal for both men and women. The agricultural wage laborers also exercise greater bargaining power due to the availability of work. This is another thing why actually after coming to the power, the BJP party now who is in power, they tried to scrap this act because from Punjab and Haryana, where rich peasants are very strong, their lobby is strong, they try to actually scrap this act. So this was a big news, and some international academicians, they wrote to actually in the national newspaper that you should not do it, you should just keep it because some people are getting jobs. So this rich peasants lobby are trying to scrap this act through BJP government. No? On the other hand, the landowner farmers are affected due to the increase of wage rate and the crisis of laborers. In some cases, these farmers become reluctant to continue farming as a profession. Another feature that people are not interested to continue the farming because of the increase of the wage. You know, so this is another feature. But in many cases, the big landowners try to introduce more mechanization in agriculture. This is another problem future problem of job crisis, because mechanization means lower employment. So this is another problem. As a result, there seems to be probability of greater class conflict or caste conflict in the rural hinterland. And the issue of inequity take new shape and recreate new problems of governance as a result of the socio-political processes immersed at the grassroots due to implementation of different poverty alleviation policies of the government. Hence, it is not only the structural constraint inherent in the society, but also there are other constraints for which anti-poverty programs are not being implemented successfully. But where it is implemented, it is still rendering the individuals dependent clients of the states, and the small producers who have been continually dispossessed of their lands or other means of labor in the neoliberalism are not simultaneously being provided with some other means of livelihood as part of governmentality, as argued by the scholars. In fact, the dominant discourse predominantly does not take into account the highly unequal social context in which poverty is produced and reproduced. Until and unless we are careful to take into account this unequal context and the way we approach the poverty issues, we will land up time and again with an unfinished agenda of poverty alleviation. Perhaps it is time to reflect now, as Chandok proposes, on the right of the people not to be poor. The question at the end arises, when there has always been a kind of deficiencies in providing the well-being of the population, how the regime secures its legitimacy by mediating with or managing the issues of governance. In fact, due to these deficiencies of governance or lack of development, the concerned citizen always makes some protests or criticism against the government in order to fulfill the lack of the part of the government. These criticisms or protests of the citizens might become a force which can make a change in policies of the government and in attitude and actions of the administration to some extent, and subsequently that extending the limits of some practices and obviously allow the invention of others. All these steps or policy reforms may further strengthen and extend the hegemony of capitalist regime or the art of contemporary government by governing the difference in a new fashion. Thank you.